It's time for Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo Foley, they're here, they're home. The sound quality is superb. The video, pretty darn good as well. We're going to be talking about the latest news from Microsoft. It's actually kind of a slow week, so we may be throwing in some personal observations, some funny anecdotes. And Paul has, actually, the best stuff is at the back of the book, two really good tips for us. You're going to want to stay tuned. Windows Weekly is coming up next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley. Episode 525, recorded Wednesday, July 5th, 2017. Token rings back. It's time for Windows Weekly, the show where we cover the latest news from Redmond, from Microsoft, with my two favorite Windows analysts, Brad Sams. No, although Brad will show up from time to time, as
he
you
will.
Know. But I'm talking Mary Jo Foley from allaboutmicrosoft.com. Always a pleasure. ZDNet's queen of Microsoft and the king of Thurrott.com.
It's kind of a lonely kingdom.
It's kind of like old King Cole. Mr. Paul Thurrott. And between the two of them, I think there's nothing happening up there in Redmond that they don't know about. I was just talking with a friend of mine. He's the morning show host in L.A., Bill Handel, who was in Seattle, and noting that how Amazon is basically taking over downtown.
Yeah.
They're just – so you've noticed – I haven't been up there lately.
There's only two things downtown now, sports stadiums and Amazon buildings.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. And Microsoft – Redmond is out of town. Redmond is not
– Yeah. Yeah.
Yep. But it's interesting. We talked a little bit about this. Amazon's decision to build its corporate headquarters in the middle of a town with other, you know, with other businesses and people, kind of a vital area, contrasts dramatically with what Microsoft did. And Microsoft, understandably, wanted to build a college campus, basically attracting, you know, smart minds out of college so they'd feel at home. Google pretty much did the same thing, and now Apple's taking it one step further by essentially building a fort. And everything happens inside the ring, right? And you can't peer in or anything. It's a fort.
Remember, you know, people forget this, but Microsoft started in Albuquerque, and one of the reasons they moved to the Seattle area was that it rained so much, and Bill Gates knew that they would keep the programmers inside. They wouldn't have anything to do.
Oh, that's interesting. I suspect it also had something to do with the lack of state income tax as well.
That could have.
It's got to be
when he was from that area.
Oh, that's right. He grew up there. He just moved back home.
Yeah, and I think the city of Redmond gave them, and maybe still gives them, substantial tax breaks for being in Redmond.
As they should.
Oh, I'm sure they are 85% of the taxes in Redmond, especially if you include their employees who live there.
Right.
But yeah, you know, Microsoft was weird, right? It was always the reverse commute from Seattle. They created kind of an interesting opposite effect. But now that Amazon is downtown, you know, maybe that's regulated a little bit or evened out.
A lot of Microsoft employees didn't used to live in Seattle, if you remember. Like, they all would live all around.
Yeah, no, I'm sorry. I didn't mean, like, literally people commuting. Yeah. I meant normally people commute into the city, and in this case, they put it outside of the city, you know, so they didn't really need that commuting.
But now I think a lot of their newer employees are like, oh, I wish we had some buildings downtown because that's where we live.
Well, it's people don't want to commute, right? And that's what I think Amazon's realized. Wow, these are wild looking. These spheres.
The globes are spheres.
It's like a transformer, like cried on it or something.
So there's Amazon says 25,000 employees in these downtown buildings, and most of them live within walking distance.
Hmm.
And that's kind of what you like, right? Is that idea of, I mean, no commute. Mary Jo's got the shortest commute.
Too lazy to get their licenses.
I do. I have the ultimate commute.
But anybody who's had a long commute, as I have, I used to commute, had a terrible commute, really appreciates the idea that you could walk to work is like mad. And especially in a city, is magical. And I guess that's the new thing kids want, right?
Maybe. Well, both of us, Mary Jo and I, Mary Jo lived there. But I mean, I had been going out to Seattle for 20 whatever years, 25 years. Seattle. But I say that. I don't actually go to Seattle. That's the funny thing. I always say Seattle because that makes sense to people. But the truth is I've really been kind of going to Redmond, Bellevue for most of that time. And that was one of the neat things about Build this year. We actually got back to go, you know, or got to go back to Seattle proper. And just, I mean, I don't know, I'm not, I had been in Seattle certainly a couple, you know, here and there over the past few years, but it was the first meaningful visit to the city in a long time, and it was really nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's, I think this is not merely a corporate culture. It's a change, it's changing styles.
Yeah, and changing, what do you call it? Not demographics, but just, I guess it's demographics. You know, it's just that people are, cities are more important than ever. People like to live in cities.
Yeah. Yeah, in fact, it's an interesting demographic fact that most of America is now urban, is becoming urbanized, and most of the voters, most of the votes are in the country, countryside. Well, that's how founders wanted it. But
if you go to Europe, you'll see something that's not very common here. Although depending on where you are, you can see it, and it's kind of mixed use space. You know, where you might have a big building, but the bottom of it is retail or grocery store, or whatever, and then there are apartments above it. And, you know, even in this little town I live in now, we're finally starting to see a little bit of that happen with new construction. But I look at the downtown area and I always think, you know, you could put apartments right above all of these old buildings. Like, people would love to live there.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's really something that's changing. There's also a value to it. And Steve Jobs knew about this, but he didn't see it as part of a larger community. He saw the value of having Apple employees all talking to one another, which is why he only wanted one bathroom in the new headquarters.
Remember, he wanted a Disney-like Apple town at one point a long time ago.
But I think there's even more value to be gained. Not only that the employees get to communicate with each other, but they're part of a larger community, especially for a company like Amazon, where the customers really are people, normal people. Right. And understanding your customer is clearly, that's what Amazon says. They want to be the best customer-centric company in the world. It makes a lot of sense for them to be in that environment. And I wonder if it's going to hurt Apple a little bit to be insulated inside the spaceship. That's going to detach them from their customer
base. They've always been insulated, though, right? I mean,
they have. It's their culture.
Corporate culture.
Yeah.
It's
just
the way it is.
I love the Microsoft campus. It's beautiful, but I'm now wondering maybe if they're going to suffer a little bit by being kind of out in the middle of nowhere.
Well, they have what do they call those? They're almost like WeWork places downtown where they let their employees sometimes work outside of the Redmond area who want to work downtown.
Remember,
they have offices in Bellevue and other places right around Redmond.
Yeah, and I wouldn't be surprised to see them move more in that direction. Look at what Tony Hsieh did.
I want to see them pave over
Zappos.
The 520 and put buildings on top of it. I don't understand why they don't do that.
That's the city of the future. Yeah, that's why Elon Musk is building the Boring Company. Everything, all the road, they should be underground.
Yep.
And then people live on the surface of the planet. So I saw a lot of rumors over the last few days about big layoffs at Microsoft, but it's the sales organization, right? What's the latest?
I'll add to that later. But anyway.
Okay. So every year around this time, because it's the start of Microsoft's new fiscal year on July 1, they tend to have reorgs. Sometimes Satya Nadella or whoever the CEO is will put out a memo saying why they're doing them. But so far, this time around, all we have is information about what they announced internally. So they put out some memos on July 3rd, tough day, most people gone, but great for hiding news, of course, about a pretty sweeping sales reorg at the company. And the memo came from Judson Althoff, who is the head of Microsoft's worldwide commercial business. He's the guy who basically took over for Kevin Turner last year when he left the company. And what they're doing is moving a lot of people around, kind of refocusing the business on commercial, which means business, and consumer, which of course means consumer, making some new business units, moving people around inside. A lot of people thought this was going to be yet another cloud-first, mobile-first thing from Microsoft. And in some ways it is, but they never really talk about cloud or mobile when they're talking about this reorg. I've seen the reorg memo, and I actually counted how many times they say cloud in it. They say it once. They say mobile once, and they say digital transformation a lot, which to me is kind of a meaningless buzzword, but one that Microsoft loves these days. And I guess you could say digital transformation is the way to roll up cloud and mobile and business processes, like all the things they talk about a lot these days. But that's where the focus is. In this memo, they keep saying, you know, we want to make it easier for us to help customers and partners digitally transform. That comes up a lot. Is there any real meaning in what they did so far? Not a lot, I would argue. They kind of moved a lot of chess pieces around inside. They did not make any layoffs yet, but we're all hearing there are layoffs coming as part of this. The question is when and how many? And that's the part we don't know. We keep hearing they may tell employees this week inside about the layoffs, but so far as of today, I haven't heard that they've told anybody.
I can't believe I'm about to say this, but I actually might have some information about this topic, because this is kind of a Mary Jo thing, obviously. But somebody told me that July 6th is the date for that kind of stuff. So maybe we'll find out that tomorrow. Also that it's possible it could be up to 20% of, I don't know what workforce they're referring to here. I don't know if it's the whole sales marketing group or some broader group, but there could be as many as 10,000 people if that's true. So we will see.
Which would be the other gigantic. Let's put this in perspective. If they lay off 10,000 people this week, this is unprecedented, right? They've never done that before.
Yeah, right. So the rumors internally is that it will be big, you know, however that shakes out. But I think other people had said something thousands, you know.
Yeah, thousands. Maybe, people keep saying thousands. And, but, you know, yeah, they've laid off thousands before, right? When they kind of dismantled the whole Nokia thing, they did it in phases, like 2,000 here, 5,000 here. They've never, as far as I can remember, just said, hey, we're cutting 10,000 people in the next year.
Yeah, and this is also one of those things I think that's going to happen over time. Like there'll be some now, some in the fall, that kind of thing. Yeah. But the other little bit I got out of this was that more quietly than this, because this will obviously be public and will be a big thing. It's that time of the year. It's the start of a new fiscal year. They tend to do this kind of thing now. There's a bunch of other people getting cut during this time that I don't think is going to be publicized as broadly. And these will be people across all parts of Microsoft, not just the sales and marketing organization. Mm-hmm. And there'll be some, you know, executive types will be kind of retiring, you know, with air quotes, because it's time for you to go. Yeah. And I'm curious how much we'll hear about that stuff. I sort of got the vibe from this that we won't hear a lot about that stuff because they'll be very public with the sales and marketing stuff. You know, it's digital transformation. We're doing this thing, you know, we are, and, you know, it won't sound so terrible.
I think this is also, I mean, speaking of the new normal, pretty, not just for Microsoft, but for a lot of companies, there's always, they call it right sizing, right? Which isn't very consoling to the people who lose their jobs, but.
No, but actually, as terrible as that phrase sounds, it actually makes some sense. Because you're whatever size organization, you're 100,000 people, 160,000 people, whatever the number is, you don't always have the people in the right places, right? And so the net headcount at the end of the year doesn't necessarily go down, although I think it probably will. Yeah. It's more about making sure you have the right number of people and the right people in the right places. You know, a company that was focused on, say, mobile development for a while, like Microsoft was, needs to reallocate those resources because they're not doing that stuff anymore. Yeah. And that's kind of a right sizing type.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of a cultural shift from the old days where a company would, you know, a General Electric would hire people and you'd have a job for life and the company's fortunes would ebb and flow, but they would just maintain a staff. And now we're, you know, it's a just in time economy for people as well as goods.
Plus, you know, I'm not saying I don't actually know because I haven't worked at a company of the size of Microsoft, like, you know, 100,000 plus people, but they have, or at least as of last year, had almost 50,000 people in sales and marketing. Like half the company was in sales and marketing. Right. So the question is, you know, since they're partner driven, they always talk about partners being their sales force. Do you need 50,000 people doing this?
Right. Are those guys doing to that business what Surface is kind of doing to PC makers, right? You're competing in a way with partner efforts.
Yep. But we should talk a little more about consumer because, you know, commercial is where Microsoft makes all their money. That's where they moved people around in a kind of predictable way, I thought. Mm-hmm. They talked about we need to have people focused on the key verticals like manufacturing, financial services, retail, all the things you would expect. But then they also had a section of this memo that talked about how they want to go after the consumer market. And it's not a lot different from what we've heard them say before. They're still doing the whole, if we can get people to use what they use at work, at home, and vice versa, that we think that will be a positive reinforcing effect. So, if people are used to Office 365 at work, we're hoping that will translate to them using Office 365 at home. Any kind of, they call them creativity tools, anything they might use at work, at home, kind of a cross benefit. Like if you use mixed reality at home, maybe that will make you go into your office and say, hey, you know what, we should do this HoloLens thing maybe. So they're hoping to capitalize on that. They also talked about bringing together in one team the Salesforce for Surface with the other consumer and device sales team. So kind of having more of a unified face on what they're doing with Surface, with Office 365, with Windows devices, and also with gaming. They brought up gaming in the memo and said, things like esports, game broadcasting like we're doing with Mixer, Xbox, obviously, all these things also are still going to be a key focus for them going forward in consumer. And they want to partner with companies in their ecosystem as they go forward with all this stuff. So they definitely are not, people, including me, have said, why do they still do consumer at Microsoft? They're really a commercial / business company, but they are definitely going to continue to push on consumer and see that as a key part of what they want to be in this coming year.
It was interesting to me because you and I both wrote a story about this exact same topic at exactly the same time. And it's funny because, we think of Microsoft as a commercial software company, which they are. And it was interesting. It's interesting that both of us kind of settled on this consumer thing because a lot of us do think about Microsoft walking away from that. And I kind of went through that and I thought, I really see their consumer stuff as being in a support role for the other stuff. Like you mentioned, I think that they want people to buy Office 365 at home because they use it at work, or that maybe they get Microsoft hardware at work and they want to use that at home or whatever it might be. It's the age old value prop of the PC, right? Can use the same software, the same services, the same hardware, maybe both at home and at work. But I don't know what the exact percentage is. I think we all would probably say maybe 2/3 of Microsoft's business is commercial and 1/3 is consumer. It might even be worse than that, but whatever the ratio is, whatever it is. I have to think that the point of all of this stuff is literally to support that thing that Microsoft really is, which is this cloud services company, and that these things are, in other words, they make attractive devices that people want, not because the sale of that device will make them any money or much money, probably no money, but whatever, but rather because it gets them into the ecosystem and they want them paying for Office 365, for Xbox Live Gold or whatever the services are that they can attach to those things. And like, that's the point,
Yeah, I mean, I think it goes a little too far to say they want Surface to be the loss leader, right? Because they don't want to lose
money.
No,
that's Surface, harsh, but
that's kind of what you're saying, and you're right.
Yeah.
They care more about somebody for the long-term view of the company's health, subscribing to Office 365 or Xbox Live, than they do about somebody buying a Surface. They do, right?
It's a huge win for a company like Microsoft to be perceived as being cool or hip, to be seen as out designing Apple, which is a story you see around these days for some reason. Our Xbox One X could be seen in this way as well. It's a machine where what's important to that market, that you be the most powerful, the best graphics, and they've apparently delivered that. And so it's not that the sales of that thing don't matter. They do matter. Right. It has to exist to some capacity. But the thing they're really measuring there is the sales of the services and the software that gets attached to those things.
Mm-hmm. Plus, remember when we had Chris Capicella on, I think it was the first time we had him on, he talked a lot about the idea of Microsoft wanting to build, you know, turn people from customers into fans, right? And this is another recurring theme for them. It comes up in this memo again where they want to make people not just use stuff because they have to at work and it's like, oh yeah, we use Office, you know, but they want people to be excited. And it's way easier to get people excited about personal gadgets like Surface than it is about things like System Center, to be honest. You know?
Data lakes are pretty cool, but I see what you're saying.
Data lakes are cool, but So I think that's part of this too. Why did they say stay in consumer? Because you need that to get people excited, like you just said. And some people are really excited about stuff they do at work. I mean, you know, all the cognitive toolkit stuff and all that, R server, all interesting, but like, is that going to make you a fan? I don't know. It's a stretch. Right?
Yeah, fair. I think tied to this is this phrase that I think first came up at Build, but we've seen it a few times since, that intelligent edge, intelligent cloud saying that they have, which we can and probably should see as a replacement for mobile first, cloud first, which was itself a replacement for devices and services, or however Steve Ballmer put it. It's funny because that phrase, it sounds like they're saying the same thing. The intelligent edge is the device. And the intelligent cloud is obviously the cloud. And so it sounds like devices, cloud, you know, it sounds like it's the same thing. But there's a really, it's subtle, but it's an important distinction, because really what they're saying there is cloud, you know?
Yeah.
Because the thing that makes those devices on the edge intelligent are Microsoft services that run in the cloud. And those devices are not necessarily Microsoft devices. In fact, oftentimes they're not. And I understand this is a transition, but this very clearly is a step toward that actual future, you know, where it's primarily cloud services. I think they're already kind of there. If you look at where the revenues come from today, they're pretty much falling into this right now. It's not so much, well, I don't know that it ever was, but it's not about really revenues directly from devices. You know, it's about getting your services and software on devices that people actually use to drive the revenue to the cloud subscription services that they're hopefully paying for.
The other word that comes up in the memo a couple places is IoT, which also has to do with this edge, you know, cloud on the edge and edge devices. I think we're going to see, based on this, even more focus from them on IoT and kind of where their place is in the IoT ecosystem. And again, that's a services play too for them.
There's a reason Google is getting into IoT now. You know, Raspberry Pi is not strictly an IoT type of thing, but it sort of, and it's a big enthusiast thing for sure. But the IoT today is largely probably Linux, and this is something Microsoft needs to be part of.
It's interesting. Do you think employees are just less interested in enterprise stuff, so you have to make some consumer stuff to keep them engaged? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
No.
Oh. I know Mary Jo doesn't believe that, and I know Paul does.
Well, no. I mean, in other words, if you go back in time 20 or 30 years or whatever, the software we would now describe as enterprise software didn't really exist. But, you know, the work place related software was exciting and new. I mean, but these days the exciting and new stuff is happening in mobile. It's happening in mobile, basically. You know, what the thing that people are excited about are these devices. You're talking about this Amazon Echo Home or whatever the name is, the thing with the screen. This is exciting and new. And this is, you know, we've had a teleconferencing system in the enterprise for many years. You know, like that's not particularly interesting to people. Yeah, consumer stuff is very interesting. And, you know, there's a reason why the whole BYOD thing happened. There's a reason that Microsoft tried to get into mobile phones, you know, in a big way. It's just, and for many companies, it's where the money is too, but it's where the excitement is for sure.
I think consumer is easier to get a handle on, because we all know what it's like to get a new phone and like how exciting it is, right? Mm-hmm. Or a new laptop or a new tablet.
Yeah.
You know, if somebody said to you, hey, here's your credentials for Azure. Woo! Right?
Oh, yeah. Hey, Bob, we just enabled a new feature for your E3 tenant.
But that said, you know what? This is where like a lot of Microsoft's future and a lot of money is to be made, right? Like there's a ton of excitement around things like big data and AI. And this is like the cutting edge of what's going on in the enterprise. And there are a lot of people very excited about that. Okay. But it's not as easy for, I think, for journalists and for a lot of normal people to get as excited about things like data lakes as it is
because
to get
I'm not
excited
Carl
about.
Sagan. I don't understand it, but I understand a shiny object. Ooh, it's pretty.
Yep.
It's really kind of an interesting conversation.
Well, you remember Ray Ozzie used to say this a lot when he was at Microsoft. He used to say, you know, all the innovation these days is happening in consumer first. Yeah. And then a lot of those innovations are translating into enterprise. I never totally agreed with that, but I mean, who am I to argue with Ray Ozzie, right? So, I mean, that was kind of his perception
about the messaging thing is an example of that, right? He never foresaw that happening, I bet. And yet here we are, major enterprise solutions from Microsoft and other companies that are based around my children sending emojis to each other, right? It's the same basic technology. It absolutely came from that world. I mean, I feel pity for the coming generation of idiots that can only communicate that way in the workplace. That'll be hilarious. But
come on, you love sprinkles. You talk about them all the time.
I was talking to Raphael over the weekend about a Hyper-V feature, and I was saying, you know, I bet you could name a Hyper-V virtual machine using only emoji characters. And he goes, you know what? I bet you're right. And then he went to look and he said, you know, I'm not even going to look at this because when it happens, it's just going to kill me.
Yeah. Yeah. But even the idea of keeping your devices up to date all the time and the way that works on a phone, right? Now we're seeing that come to Windows and that really came to consumer first, right? Like that's another example of something that this is how it works in consumer, and now Microsoft and other companies want to make this the way it works in business too.
It's really funny. I never thought of it, but as you said that, I realized, you know, because there's been a lot of discussion. I've written a lot about this topic. I made a commentary over the weekend where I kind of said, you know, iOS is updated once a year in major ways, and everyone updates. Android is updated once a year in major ways, and nobody really updates to it, or they update slowly to it, but it happens over time. You know, people buy new devices, whatever. Windows, which is a more mature and more complex system than either one of those things, for some reason needs to be updated twice a year because, you know, I don't know why. You would think a more mature system would have to be updated less, but here they are. They're going to do two major updates a year, and they're going to, you know, obviously do quality and security updates every month. But, you know, the thing you just said that's really interesting is, here's Microsoft, right? They've been dealing with these enterprises for decades, being very frustrated by the slow pace of deployment, that Microsoft will come out with a new version of Windows, and these guys are still two versions behind and show no interest at all in moving forward from that. Meanwhile, over on the side, over with the consumers, people are updating their phones willy-nilly. Nobody cares. They just, a new version of iOS, cool. You click, and off they go. They update apps every single day, every single day. No one questions this. You know, there's been no call for Apple to slow down the pace of iOS development or to stop updating the apps every day. I don't think anyone has ever really complained about that, not in a major way. It must be with a great sense of jealousy that Microsoft saw this happening around them, but not to them, you know, and that you might take the Windows as a service strategy as the ultimate expression of that jealousy, as the ultimate expression of the thing we were just talking about, that this consumer thing is now happening to businesses or in the enterprise or to Microsoft's commercial software. It is kind of a crazy change when you think about it.
Yeah.
In the cloud. Yeah. To the cloud, as the Microsoft ad used to say.
To the cloud. Or now instead of to the cloud, we have to somehow make digital transformation the new buzz phrase.
Digital.
You know, another word for transformation, I think, is deviant.
Deviation. Digital deviance.
DT.
Well, DT. Digital transformation. I think that's pretty nebulous, boy. I don't know what the hell that means.
It's pretty nebulous. Yeah.
As recently as Windows 8, I believe Steven Sinofsky, said... you know, 3 years is a good time frame for a new version of Windows. Yeah. Remember?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. I know you got a little thing in the back you throw when I said that, but
it's okay.
All right. What else do you want to talk about? We're filling today. There's not a whole lot. Windows 10. I saw that the timeline feature is being pushed back. What is it, and why should we care? And are we sad?
Mm-hmm. Sad? Are we happy?
Are we happy?
I guess it wasn't that surprising because I am not an insider, but I know Paul is. And I don't think you guys have had a build of Timeline in any of the insider builds, right?
Nope.
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 So Timeline was that thing they showed at Build where it's related to pick up where you left off. And what it does is if you're working on something and you stop and do something else, you can look and kind of click on a card and pick up in an app where you last left off. So say you're working on something in Excel, then you go do something else on your PC, and then you want to come back to where you were, you can click on the card. And the whole pick up where you left off took that for a bit further and said you could also do that across devices. So if you were working on a Windows desktop and then you went home and started using your Android phone, you could pick up with that where you left off. Neither of those things are going to be in the Fall Creators Update now. And I was trying to find if Microsoft actually said, like, definitively, this is going to be in the Creators Update. They did, right? They said it.
I have not looked this up yet, but Joe Belfiore claims they did not say this. I'm pretty sure they did.
Yeah.
Well, they
showed
it. You know,
Apple has functionality like this called Hangover or Handoff or whatever it is.
Hangover.
Yeah. And, you know, the Apple thing probably works great. I don't use it, but I would imagine, you know, when being in control of all those platforms really helps make that kind of thing happen. I think speaking as a Windows user.
Without Windows Phone, what does it even mean to do a handoff?
Well, and if you can make this stuff work cross-platform and work on Android and iOS, that becomes very interesting, right? And, you know, at Build, they did show off a number of Windows 10 things or Windows 10 related things that would improve phones, not Microsoft phones, you know, and this being one of them. Well, or the pick up where you left off being one of them. But yeah, you know, she's right. I don't think we've seen any of this stuff in any of these Windows Insider builds. And I'm starting to wonder if some of this other stuff is going to fall behind, like the cloud clipboard stuff that we're talking about.
Somebody said that's not going to make it either, the cloud clipboard. And that's connected, though, isn't it, to pick up where you left off?
Well, yes. I mean, but these were the most exciting things they announced for Windows 10.
Yeah, I know.
You know, it's really kind of gutted it. And by the way, it speaks to what I just talked about, this notion that Microsoft for some reason feels that they have to update Windows twice a year. But now they're making all these promises and then they're not delivering them in the next update. This is not the first time it's happened. In fact, on the web today, still inexplicably, is a video introducing you to the Windows 10 Creators Update featuring a bunch of things that are not in it. You know, because they made that video months in advance and at the time planned to include that stuff and then later claimed it was just aspirational. It wasn't meant to indicate what was going to be in the release. But then why is it on the Creators Update website, you ask? I don't know.
Right.
So that's a little disappointing.
I know. You know, in some ways I don't want to dwell on this too much because we get really down on Microsoft during the Windows 8 time when they would always under promise and over deliver, right? So they would never tell you what was coming. And then some stuff would show up and you'd be like, oh, I wish we had known that was coming. So now they're kind of going the opposite way, right? They're showing us their vision for things that are coming and how it could play out, but they're not delivering on it. So now they're doing the reverse,
which
right?
Which is worse? So which is worse?
Actually, I have a solution to this problem. But first, Mary Jo, would you grab your gong for a second? Because I have a slight rant I'd like to go
on. Boy, here we go.
Oh,
so,
no.
Time for the gong.
The issue I have with this is that for some reason, there's an empty box behind me in the video. Okay, so anyway, the issue I have with this, I'm moving.
He's moving, folks. He's moving.
The issue I have with this is that it's easy to fix. You don't say this is coming in the next version. You say sometime in the next year, we will deliver features. We're not promising it for the next version, but we want to show you this now because, you know, insiders will be testing it this year, et cetera. I mean, I think the issue I had is that they came up very publicly, and you can go watch the video yourself right now, made promises. And now the way that they scale them back is somebody notices an asterisk on a website They mention it on Twitter, and then a Microsoft executive gets on Twitter in a place where no one's going to see the response.
That's a very good point.
We canceled that feature. And I'm sorry, but that is a horrible way to communicate with your customers.
But they're caught up a little bit in this new world of, you know.
That's all.
And they didn't totally cancel it, right? Belfiore said insiders should start seeing the feature in some insider builds right after we deliver a Fall Creators update.
That's not okay. That means it's not coming until the next.
Wow. The the time to gong is getting shorter and shorter, I noticed.
It is.
No, it's
time
okay.
To gong.
She's right not to want this because I could destroy the next 2 hours.
No, you know, let's be realistic, right? Things happen in software development. And do we want them to roll out features that are like half-baked and horrible? No, right?
No. I guess my point is all you have to do is communicate it more clearly. I don't mind that it's going to take this long. If they had come out in April and said, a year from now we're going to have this thing, okay, fine.
Or we might not know exactly when this is. It might be Fall Creators Update. It might be next spring, Redstone 4.
They could have said that. You know, it's not hard to qualify things in such a way that you don't look like a jerk later. That's all. that's all. It's simple, you know. Yeah. I agree with you about the under-promise, over-deliver thing. And, you know, I always think back to Windows Vista and Longhorn and how awful that must have been for Jim Altchin and those guys. And being afraid that Microsoft would never take those kinds of risks again because of the way that they failed so badly with that thing. You're right. I don't want to see them gripped by this. But you know, this is one of those extremes issues. I mean, I think with these two major feature update things a year, they painted themselves into kind of a weird corner. And I don't know why they did that. If you look at the list of things that Apple's delivering in Mac OS, it's not very exciting. But you know what? That's a legacy, well-understood software thing. It doesn't need crazy major updates.
I think what they need to do, which is something they're not really doing, is once they don't deliver something or it gets pushed, they need to update their own roadmap so that people know, right? Like the other feature that's not anywhere. Like where is Capture 3D, that app they showed in October?
Right. That's probably
Probably
never going to happen. Yeah.
I mean, and then there were a bunch of new Continuum features they announced for Windows Phone at Ignite last year, which nobody knows where those are either, right?
My longest running experience with Microsoft officially, you know, as a person covering them like I do, was going back to the beginning of Internet Explorer and being very excited by what they were doing. And then going home and looking at the early beta versioning and having it not measure up in any way, shape, or form to what they showed on stage.
Yeah.
And it's been a great 25 years, Microsoft, of that kind of stuff. So thanks for that. But it's amazing to me how this falls into that exact same category. You think about the, I don't remember the exact name, but the story remix stuff that they showed off with all these AR effects and she's kicking a ball of fire into a goal or whatever. You know, the story remix thing that they added to the Photos app bears zero resemblance to that thing that they showed off on stage. Now, I'm not saying that that thing isn't going to eventually happen. I maybe it will. Yeah. But this is so typical of Microsoft. It's the show Longhorn off on stage and then give you this piece of crap build of Windows XP that looks nothing like the thing they showed off on stage. You know, no, but, I mean, there were a million examples of this.
Yeah. You know what would be good for them to go back to do? Remember when they did those envisioning videos? I don't think they've done one in 2 or 3 years where they showed you this. It was a totally fake scenario, obviously, but it was meant to show you like this is the like long-term thinking and kind of where we see this going. They don't do those anymore. But I thought those were good for kind of giving people the bigger picture vision. And maybe that's the way to get around this. So you show us things like Capture 3D in that, but you don't pin a time frame to it.
Do you think them not controlling the hardware makes that a little more fanciful or difficult? You know, I think if you think back to that last one where they had the flat phone and you know, they kind of opened it up on the escalator or whatever the scenario was. I mean, the thought at the time is this would be some future version of Windows Phone, right? This is some Windows device is what that thing is. You know, where they don't really have the opportunity to
I don't know. I don't think they have to be the one to build it. Like, they could be working with HP or anybody else and say, hey, you know, like, look at this cool vision we have. Like, can you build something like this? We'll help you, you know.
They used to do that with HP, actually. Remember during the Longhorn stuff? I can't think of the name. Athena PC, I think was the name of it.
Yeah.
The kind of fanciful future PC project they were doing.
Yep. Yeah, reference designs, right? When they used to do those. I don't
the
know
Asus,
if they really even do those.
The notebook that had the dock for the phone on the back. And you were going to open, you know. And they had those. that's weird. I'm kind of reminding myself of stuff they never delivered. Jerks. The the secondary screens that were going to be on the outside of laptops. So that you could
those
see.
Those are pretty weird.
Like, we didn't miss any of this crap, right?
Yeah, I know. Right.
Look, I want a Corsair, and I want to have a
Corsair. Unsafe at any speed.
I'm not saying they were all winners. I'm just saying they all didn't happen.
So. I mean, now that we're saying all this, though, I don't want you to go back to the former under-promise, over-deliver thing.
There's got to be a happy medium.
That's what. Thank you. That's all I'm asking for. And since I always do this, I will add the glass half full version of this story, which is they are doing things in other areas which are positive, right? One I was reminded of today was the OneDrive thing. So, for example, a couple of years ago, 18 months ago or whatever, the story on OneDrive was not very positive. Remember, they had canceled their plans for unlimited storage. They got rid of placeholders. They had no plans to bring them back. Now, this is a great example of under-promise, over-deliver, right? They actually did bring back placeholders, and they're better than they were before. Yeah. That was very much unexpected. So, not coincidentally, but as it happens over the weekend, I actually broke the ties to Dropbox that I use in my workflow, and I have everything pumping through OneDrive again. And that's been 2 years of paying $100 a year to Dropbox because I was really nervous about the direction Microsoft was going with OneDrive. And now I'm very confident that it's great.
Nice.
Leo, are you okay?
Yeah. Just thinking of those amazing Windows products we never got.
Yep. It's like the island of misfit toys, but it's Microsoft products that never happened.
I don't want to jump ahead to the Surface Mini, but I thought that was kind of interesting.
Speaking of which.
That fits
now.
In. Yep.
We've seen pictures of it.
Well, so the thing is, I've seen this, and I thought I had published photos of this before, but I don't know.
Did you actually see the thing? You did, right?
Like, yeah.
You saw a device.
Brad and I both have images of it and seen it, and so this kind of came out as like first ever photos. Like, see, it was real, and I'm like, what are you talking about? We knew this was real. But I guess So anyway, once again, folks, it was real.
Yeah. I mean, Surface Mini, for people who don't remember.
They exist.
Tell them what it is.
It's a little Windows RT mini tablet, you know, back for
that. This is the one that Della killed the moment he arrived. Is that it?
Yeah. This was the most decisive leadership I've seen out of this guy yet because it was such a terrible idea.
They had warehouses full of them.
They built a lot of them.
They built them, and I believe the reason they built them was to give them to us. I think that they had built them for a reviewer's workshop that never happened. And I'm going to do this off the top of my head, but if I'm not mistaken, that was the year they were going to launch Surface Pro 3 that year, and Surface Pro 3 was a sideshow to this thing. This was going to be the big event.
Wow.
And Nadella came in that summer, and he said, this is a ridiculous idea. In fact,
They said it wasn't differentiated enough. Remember that?
Well, it looks like a Surface Pro. It's got a detachable keyboard.
But it didn't have a keyboard cover. It just had a regular keyboard, like a cover, like a smart cover or whatever.
Yeah. Oh, that's not a keyboard. That's just a cover.
No, it's not a keyboard.
But it was a kickstand, a pen, right? And it was, some people thought it was like the Courier Revisited, except it didn't have the dual screen, right?
There was a little time there where 8-inch tablets were a big thing.
Yep.
Within the confines of Windows tablets.
You know, it's funny. It must have been something that people liked and wanted, but then nobody bought. Because remember, Google made a 7-inch tablet, which it sold very cheaply, which people to this day...
I owned both of them, and they were great.
Yeah, but they never made another one, which tells me they didn't... I mean, despite the fact everybody
sings its
praises.
Well, I think the mini tablet thing came and went, right? Yeah. So people want tablets. A bigger size tablet is better. And for people like the small form factor, a phablet is better.
That's what happened, right? The big phones killed the small tablets. Mm-hmm. Although, I think Mike Elgin wrote a great piece in Computer World this week, which he says the phone is really being phased out. I mean, and Google Fi is a good example of this. Increasingly, you'll be able to get telecommunications over data.
Right.
And ultimately, really, any form factor, including a 7-inch or 12-inch tablet, could be a phone. So it may end up being that that revives this small tablet category. If people
and this may explain this Microsoft coming Windows 10 thing, which is probably not a mobile device, like a Windows 10 mobile device, but rather a Windows 10 device.
Well, this would be great for Microsoft because they fumbled mobile, right?
Yeah. It would give them a chance to try to come back.
Yeah.
That's right.
But I think, you know, I think Mike's point was well taken, which is we call these smartphones, but they're really just pocket computers.
Yeah.
And the phone is less and less important. And
it's really hard to find stuff that's right, though. You know, like I as I get older, especially, I have to have a bigger screen on the phone. I just find the little screens to be difficult to use. I move up to something like an iPad Pro from an iPad Mini, and I find that to be too big for reading and for browsing web.
But,
that kind of
and this is what, you know, timeline might make sense. I presume this is one of the things it would do. So when in the Apple world, when my iPhone rings, every device I have, including my computer and my tablet rings.
Yes, this is the hangover feature.
I can answer it. the hangover is Apple. I can answer it anywhere. In fact, this morning I was at the breakfast table about to leave to this show, and my phone rang, but I saw it on my iPad, and I answered it and had the phone conversation on my iPad.
Yeah.
And I think that's what really Mike means by this, is that once phone calls are data,
it's like WhatsApp or Facebook
Messenger, it doesn't matter. And so, nobody's going to carry an iPad in lieu of a phone. You'll have a small pocket device, but your phone conversations might happen on your Echo Home. Your Echo Show, your Google
Home. I agree with
that
100%. Yep.
And so this specialty device called a phone is going to disappear.
Yeah.
And that maybe means that small tablets might be something people, I don't know, I guess you wouldn't carry it around. It's too big to, I mean, here's my 7-inch. It's really probably too big to carry that around.
That's so weird. I hate having an iPhone Plus in my pocket. You know, I hate it in my pocket. I'm glad that I have it. I don't, but...
Yeah,
you know,
mine is not a portable. I mean, I don't carry it around.
What is that thing?
This is the 7-inch Google tablet we were talking about.
Oh, you still? Oh, when you say something, it just pops up in front of you. What do you?
Yeah, it's magic. I just go. I'm like David Copperfield. I pulled it out of the air. Actually, I should do that.
You
I should have
$1 million
hanging
please,
there, and I should go. Yeah, you mean this? Yeah, okay. No, I have this. Well, so it's got one and one only job nowadays, which is to run a timer for me for the radio show.
Okay.
So I keep it running all the time, so I know when there's a break. But
great.
You know, these were $220, and these were less than the Amazon Echo.
I just recently sold both of mine. Those were great tablets. Mm.
I guess if you carried a purse or a briefcase, you might. I know. I think you're always going to want a phone-sized device.
One of those little mini backpacks that people have where it only takes up like a third of your back.
I know. Patrick Norton used to carry
it. You know, there's not a huge jump between a 6-inch phone and a 7-inch tablet.
And look, watch how the Samsung Note 8 sells, because that's 6.2 inches.
Yeah.
The difference there is look at how much bezel there is on this particular tablet. If you got rid of the bezel, this would be a decent... almost reasonable phone.
Too, right? In other words, if that was an 18.5x9 or however they measure that, I mean...
Yeah, that's what happened with the Samsungs. They're tall.
You'd lose 3 inches off the width of that.
Right.
And that would be amazing.
So maybe. Maybe that's where the Surface Mini might resurface. Maybe they should call it the resurface.
I think the code name we've heard is Andromeda on that, but... The Microsoft one.
So, but they're gone, right? I mean, there's no chance that I wish
Surface Mini.
Yeah, it'd be so cool. Yeah. I mean, we know. Did they bury them? Did they disassemble them?
We don't know what they did.
Employees have them. I'm aware of several employees.
So that's how we know about it.
Yeah. They're but remember, they're Windows RT devices, so these things are frozen in time in all the wrong ways.
Yeah, RT is so wrong. I mean, nobody wants RT. Yeah. But okay, so let's talk about that. RT was distinguished by two things. One, it was a stripped-down version of Windows, Windows Store only, like 10S. But mostly, it's an ARM product.
Right.
Yep.
Something RT... I mean, 10S could be an RT-like thing.
10S is going to run on ARM. Right.
Yep.
Maybe this is the future of RT is 10S.
Kind of, right? but not exactly.
Well, it's more capable than RT. That's the point, right? It's not the not the compromise that RT was. Yeah. RT really felt like a toy.
We need to see these things because there are big promises around battery life, especially kind of efficiency type things. But really what this thing needs to do is work, you know? And if anyone's ever used a low-end computer of any kind, a netbook or one of those giant 15-inch laptops that has 2 gigs of RAM and a Celeron processor or whatever it is, you know, you understand the compromise that that is and how awful it is when you click on something and you have to wait a second or two before anything launches or whatever. If that's the experience on this, then this is a non-starter. But if this thing can offer native, you know, performance like we expect from real Windows laptops and so forth, I think it has a really big chance. And it's also a step to the future in the sense that it does have the ability to run Win32 apps, and we'll see how that goes. But assuming that that's okay for people making this transition along with Microsoft, you might have that one app or two apps or whatever that just, I need that to go forward with this thing. If that can work on ARM, I mean, this moves everything forward, you know. I think getting Windows running on a more efficient and mobile-oriented architecture makes tons of sense. And let's face it, Intel hasn't exactly stepped up to the plate on this one.
Okay. Token Ring? Wait, I didn't expect to see anything about Token Ring in today's episode.
Yep.
What is Token? Not that Token Ring.
Right.
What is it?
There's a company called Token that makes biometric rings.
Oh, I saw this. You're right. Yeah. It's a token ring. So I bought on Kickstarter many moons ago a ring with an RFID chip in it. Or maybe it was an NFC. It must have been an NFC chip in it. And I have seven or eight of them. For some reason, I bought an assortment of them. This thing never took off. What makes Token different?
We'll see if this takes off either. But Microsoft is partnering with these guys, and so are a bunch of other companies.
Maybe that's the key.
Yeah, maybe. So this ring will, thanks to the Microsoft partnership, will use Windows Hello to authenticate for you to unlock your PC. So if you have the ring on, it'll unlock your PC when you're near it. And if you take the ring off, it will not unlock it, and you'll have to reauthorize your credentials, basically. So I don't know. You know, are people going to want this? Token's advertising this ring as replacing your credit card and doing things like unlocking your garage door. That's not with Microsoft, but with other vendors.
No.
$250
$250 I know. Yeah.
The ones I bought were like $10, but they.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. And it's ugly as sin. It's the really
thick. It's kind
thick.
Of ugly.
Looks even like if you get the band.
It's I know there are all these finishes. Yeah, I don't know.
This is a non-starter.
I don't know if people will be excited about it. The thing I found interesting and why I wrote about it is, you know, Microsoft isn't building band anymore, but they always said we're going to keep our hand in the wearable market. So maybe the way they do that is through partnerships, and this could be indicative of how they intend to play in wearables, not as a first-party provider, but working with third parties.
So the thing that's different is it's probably still got NFC, but it's got a fingerprint reader in it.
It does. Right. Yep.
So it really authenticates you. Just the fact that you're wearing it is not sufficient.
That's right.
Right.
And that's – so by the way, that's exactly how Apple's Watch works, except the fingerprint reader's on the iPhone. Mm-hmm. The watch has to stay on your wrist and be authenticated, and then you can use it for Apple Pay. As soon as you take it off your wrist, it's no good anymore.
How does this solve the dead finger problem, though?
Yeah.
What's the dead
finger? If somebody cuts off my finger, and takes the ring and the finger with them, are they going to be able to authenticate?
Well, see, that's how Apple solved this, because as soon as you take the watch off, it won't do it anymore. It has to be on
your wrist. But what if they cut your hand off?
Well, what they could do is take your watch, put it on, and then say, okay, now you have to authenticate on your phone.
Sure.
And now the watch would be good, even though it's not on your wrist. Mm. So, I mean, come on, really? Cut your finger off? I mean, really? Is that what we're worried about?
Yeah, a little bit.
Paul, why do you carry a wallet? Somebody could just come along and shoot you and take your contents of your wallet. Then your son would become Batman.
I believe that is a very specific crime that does happen.
That's a
Leo,
good goal. Yeah, yeah, they take your wallet. Well, now they take your ring, but they first say, but I need your finger too.
That's why I don't put my wallet in my front pocket, Leo.
Fingerprint sensors can be, and I know Apple's is, designed not to work with dead fingers.
Not to work. I don't, I'm surprised it's not on a bullet point somewhere on a slide, you know?
Well, isn't...
Guaranteed is. Not to work with severed fingers.
Yeah, I mean, isn't... I mean, Hello's designed that way, right?
I know. Remember when Hello first came out, people were like, what if someone kidnaps me and makes me get in front of my computer? Mm-hmm. Well, yep, it's going to unlock it, right?
Listen, we should hope this technology is that popular that a criminal knows to stick you in front of an infrared camera.
You're wearing a fat ring, man.
Yeah, I think it's not merely Microsoft's partnership, but Visa and MasterCard who have also said they will support this. That makes it more interesting.
I think the bigger deal for this ring is that it supports all this other stuff, right? But I think from our perspective, it's interesting to finally see some third-party Windows Hello support because honestly, there isn't a lot of that. Right. And if you look outside the enterprise, we have like smart cards or those YubiKey-type solutions or whatever. There's basically nothing. I mean, there's a couple little plug-in USB things or whatever, but... It hasn't really exploded in a way that I thought it would.
Here's a story I'm excited about. You know, my Tesla has autopilot. More and more cars have autopilot. Now, apparently Windows 10 is going to have autopilot.
Again, not the way you think of autopilot.
Although it will be user error if something goes wrong.
Yeah.
What is autopilot? Right.
So autopilot is a technology Microsoft's building into Windows and also creating as a separate service to help people provision and deploy Windows 10 devices. So this is mostly a corporate thing, right? Yeah. If you have a bunch of PCs and you want to have them all set up for your employees when they come in, already authenticated, already preloaded with the apps, all set, ready to go, this is how you'll use Windows Autopilot. And Microsoft's working with OEMs and resellers and distributors to get them to back this whole Autopilot program. Surface is going to be part of this, so there'll be a Surface Autopilot program. They're going to be starting to test that out this summer. But one thing I found interesting, which I didn't realize, the code for Autopilot is already in Windows 10. It's been in there since the Spring Creators Update.
1703.
Yeah. I guess it just hasn't been turned on till now, and they're going to be turning it on. I guess around this fall is my understanding. And they just announced, because they just announced this now and kind of made it look like it was a fall creators update feature or at least time to roll out around that time. But I know a lot of enterprise customers are like, oh, this is going to be really convenient, especially if you have a lot of surfaces and you want to just have them all set up. That's what this autopilot is, not autopilot the way you're thinking.
Oh, okay. All right.
I don't. Would you want Windows to be autopiloting anything for you?
No. I feel like it kind of is.
It kind of is.
Tesla's running on Linux, of all things. I mean, you don't really know that, but I've been told. and I presume the autopilot stuff is as well.
Sure.
But it crashes. I have to say, my Tesla's crashed a number of times. I don't know if it's a separate computer system from the autopilot system. I don't think it is because I can still drive the car. But you'll get in the car and that big 17-inch screen will be dark. And it'll say you need to, or then there'll be a message that says, I've crashed. You need to reset me.
And you're really going to come up with a better term than that.
Well, yeah, it's not, crashed. I don't think that, I actually don't know what it says.
But hey, while you're out, I was driving around. And,
you have
sorry.
To. Yeah, it probably doesn't. I'm thinking it probably doesn't say I've crashed. But you have to press, there's two buttons on the steering wheel and hold them. There's a control alt delete, and you press and hold
That's
them,
amazing.
And it reboots. But even while it's rebooting, you can still drive the car. I don't know if you can do autopilot, though. So I don't know. So it does crash. It's not that it doesn't crash. So-called crash. I bet I can find somebody's image of that on the web. Find out what it really says. Virtual machines have, for years, certainly VMware's had galleries of quick install, images that you can quickly do. Apparently Hyper-V did not, I would have assumed.
Yeah, I know, it's crazy. Oh, not in the product, right? So obviously Microsoft provides VMs of different systems for developers of all kinds, for enterprise customers and so forth. But they're actually going to, it's, you know, think of it as like an online store for VMs, except they're probably all going to be free. That you can access right from the application, right? Which when you hear that, you're like, yeah, why didn't they have this? This is so obvious. But apparently this is buried in the current insider build. Speaking of which, right, Joe, I believe Raphael told me that Timeline is actually buried in the current builds.
Yeah, I think you said that. Yeah, there are a lot of features in builds that you can't activate or that you see stubs of the code, right?
And I think in the case of Timeline, now that I'm thinking about it, I believe he said it was because it needs app support, you know, for it to work fully.
Yeah.
And if they were to deploy it now, you basically would have, it would just be a bunch of empty cards because a lot of apps don't support it yet.
Yeah, okay. Right. Anyway. So Timeline, to work, the app vendors have to build the support in, right? That's how it works.
Let's see. What else you want to talk about?
I just saw Paul's note. Hey, it worked on the French.
Hey, we're trying to start this new country. No, hold on. Listen.
We're talking about the privacy theater interface. What is the privacy theater
interface? Yeah, that's my term. But that looks. Did I add my commentary to your article? I might have.
No, I guess that's
mine. Okay, good.
That's your article.
So, as you may recall, various regulatory bodies from around the world complained that Windows 10 was violating user privacy, and Microsoft, for the Creators Update, came up with a solution that I call Privacy Theater, but it's this new interface in setup that presents you with your privacy options.
Right.
Kind of broad strokes, but gives you a chance there to do that.
Yeah, I actually thought that was a nice addition.
Well, so did the French, Leo, and apparently it satisfied their needs.
Oh,
but
really?
The interesting thing about this is, remember, you might recall this, and I know Mary Jo will, but there was a they introduced these terms like basic privacy mode, and then there were other, you know, some other mode as well. Yeah. And the basic privacy mode is when you uncheck all that privacy stuff. So you don't actually see the word basic, I think, in the UI, but that's what they think of it internally. And according to the French regulators, this thing cut down on the amount of information that Windows 10 was sending to Microsoft by, I think, 50%, I think was the figure. It was some dramatic reduction based on a similar setting, you know, previous to the Creators Update. So they were happy with that. And
ça va. Très bien. Au revoir.
But the interesting thing here is that in order to see this interface, you had to be upgrading to the Creators Update. But of course, the Creators Update is taking a long time to roll out. And so now they're actually pushing it to older versions of Windows 10. So before you upgrade to the Creators Update, you will actually be presented with this choice. And I happened to see this actually a couple weeks ago now, I guess, on one of my desktop computers that hadn't updated. And I was a little confused by it because I selected whatever I selected. And I thought, well, okay, it's going to do the upgrade. And I sort of assumed that happened, but then I just got the upgrade notice today. Hey, we've got a new update for you. And so I actually saw this a few weeks before the Creators Update was actually offered to the computer.
Right. So that's what happened to me because I just finally got Creators Update, the spring version, on my HP machine.
I saw your tweet. Yay.
Yeah. So the way that happened was I got the thing, you need to select your privacy settings, and I did that. And then months went by after I did that. And then then I got the update after that. So, yeah, it's like the first step to kick off the update basically now.
Yeah, you basically can't get the Creators Update, whether on a new computer or as an upgrade, without dealing with this screen in some capacity. It's a little bit different depending on how you get it, but it's basically the same choices.
Yeah.
And Windows App Studio.
Yeah, so I don't remember when this debuted, but not quite several years ago, but some time ago, Microsoft came up with this really cool web tool that I believe in its first rendition was only for Windows Phone apps, but it allowed you in the browser to create apps that would run on Windows Phone. And over time, they updated it so it would create apps that would run on probably Windows 8.1 or whatever version was current on at the time. And then, of course, Windows 10 was added at some point. And then more recently, I think it's basically just Windows 10. Although I would imagine the UWP apps you create with this thing would also run on a Windows 10 mobile handset. It was always a really cool tool. They updated it fairly regularly. You could export your projects into Visual Studio. So if you wanted to add features that were not possible in the cloud interface, you could do that as well. And that was always, it always seemed like kind of a neat thing. But of course, I guess it should have been the tip off, you know, once they added the ability to export this thing to Visual Studio, Maybe that should have been a clue that they were going to change it so that this would become basically a feature of Visual Studio. So in Visual Studio 2017, there's an add-in that's called the Windows Template Studio, or an extension rather, and it's basically very much like what the Windows App Studio was, but within the context of the desktop-based developer tool. So what they've announced is that they're basically canceling Windows App Studio, and they're going to move forward with this Windows Template Studio extension instead. So that's all happening very soon. They've got dates for it, but basically the web interface stops working on September 15th, and then they're shutting the whole thing down on December 1st.
Has there been a hue and cry? An uproar?
Not really. I haven't seen. I think because they had a substitute for it, I think people are okay.
Yeah, and I think right. And the when you see what they've done, it makes sense, right? I don't get to say that a lot with Microsoft, so maybe I should emphasize the fact that it makes sense.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. Microsoft's on an acquisition tear. They bought a company.
Yeah. They've been buying a lot of cloud companies.
Yeah.
This company, I think they pronounce their name Cloudyn, C-L-O-U-D-Y-N, Cloudyn. They do a monitoring and analytics product that's aimed at looking at your consumption, cost, and performance metrics for the cloud. So that's a really nice fit with what Microsoft has with Azure. The whole idea is we want to make it easier for customers to track, all the things like cost allocation, chargeback, all those things you need to calculate when you're doing your cloud analysis. And that's what Cloudyn does. The interesting thing was Cloudyn was a Microsoft partner before Microsoft bought them. They also were partnering with other vendors too, like AWS and Google and OpenStack. So our question, a lot of us, is are they going to keep doing products for those different platforms? My guess would be yes, because that's the new Microsoft. But Microsoft didn't really give us a lot of information about what exactly they plan to do with it. I mean, they're going to obviously make it an Azure service, I would say, or something to complement Azure. But they didn't say for sure that they'll continue to support AWS, Google Cloud, or OpenStack. Again, my guess would be yes on that. But they subject to regulatory approval. We don't know how much they paid. I saw some sites were estimating, I think, between $50 and $100 million for the company. And they are Israeli-based also, which is interesting. Microsoft bought a lot of Israeli-based companies, especially in security, over the past year.
Those guys are good.
They're good.
They know what they're doing.
Yep.
Interesting.
And, Paul, because you were too lazy to do a Windows Windows Weekly Xbox story, I have one for you.
Okay.
Yeah, what's your just out of curiosity, what's your total gamer score? Do you know?
I will find that out.
He doesn't like have it tattooed.
No, I don't really. I just play online now, so my gamer score thing doesn't go up anymore.
There are people, it turns out, who are gamer score achievement whores.
Mm-hmm.
They call them achievement hunters, but it's the same idea.
No, I think you had the right term.
and anybody who is paying attention knows Stallion 83, because for a long time, he has been the king for 11 years, the king of Xbox achievement scores, until last week he went on his honeymoon. He got married.
Oh, yikes.
And after 11 years on the top of the charts, he's been usurped by Steven Smirnoff Rowe.
Another dateless wonder.
Another guy with no... There is a new, ladies and gentlemen, global gamer score leader.
Now, what is his gamer score, though?
Do you really want to know? Can you will you hear this number? It's kind of mind-boggling.
I assume it's over a million.
1,592,530.
Yeah. Mine is 36,600.
Yeah, so you're a punter under this.
Oh, not even.
Not even.
Yeah. However, I'm a fraud.
A complete fraud. You pretend, as I'm often told, you're not a gamer.
Yeah, you're not.
You're not a gamer.
Call of Duty's not even a game.
It's not a game. If you're a gamer, your gamer's going to be well over a million. Mm-hmm. But apparently the honeymoon is over. And Ray
Literally
Cox,
and figuratively,
Ray Cox the fourth, Stallion 83, mm-hmm. is coming back. So
his new wife will be so proud.
He posted.
Well, he probably met her at some gaming tournament or something. Yeah.
Well, he posted a tweet as to why he has been his Xbox achievements have gone down. He says,
"Oh, that's too bad.
I've been too busy having all the sex."
Oh, boy.
So it's kind of cute when nerds make friends. Anyway, just for the time being, you know, Stallion 83 has been surpassed by Smirnoff. But game
that's
on,
amazing.
Man. Game on. My son has been playing Battlefield 1.
Yeah.
World War
I might start doing that,
it's
too.
It's actually great.
It's beautiful looking.
It's gorgeous. You're actually running through all over Europe.
I know.
Which is pretty funny. You're going through these French monuments and things. And you're using these old, you know, World War One era weapons.
Yep.
So I think that makes it a little bit more challenging. You don't have a rocket launcher.
I like the rocket launcher. I like the little surprise explosion things. Like you can like set a little bomb on the ground, someone steps on it,
and far away you hear.
You can hear it. You can hear the pin go, and you just smile. Actually, what I usually do is I pull out my Duke Nukem impersonation. And I'll be like. Have a blast.
If you don't believe him, just go look at Paul's game clips. Mm-hmm. They're full
All
of those.
All that's missing is me, is the voiceover. It's the same thing every time.
He just loves
Have
it.
A blast.
He just loves it. Yeah. Now, if you were a gamer, you'd know that Battlefield 1 is much better on a PC than it is on the Xbox. You're console guys. You're not gamers. Yeah. I don't know what you're thinking.
I'm basically a Facebook user. I hear you.
Oh, Lord of love. All right, let's do our back of the book. Believe it or not, there are no ads on today's show, which doesn't foretell a great future, but that's okay.
Yeah, it's also the start of our fiscal year, and it's looking good.
Actually, that's what's going on, right? End of a quarter, it's everybody's used up their budget, and so it takes a little while to.
You don't have to make excuses for us, Leo. It's okay. We'll fail with dignity.
It's not you. It's me.
It's not you. It's
not
everyone
you.
Else.
It's me. ladies and gentlemen, we start with our tip of the week.
Yeah. And so I have two tips, and they're both Xbox related. So I did have a little Xbox
you
surprise.
Did. You surprised.
It's the beginning of the month. So obviously games with gold. Games. With gold. I keep doing, you know what? It's games with gold, isn't
games
it?
Games with gold.
It, wrote it. I miswrote it in one place as games for gold. I keep doing that. Anywho, four new games this month. And as often the case, I'm actually a little more interested in the Xbox 360 stuff. But a couple of platformers on Xbox One. There is a Kane and Lynch 2 game on Xbox 360, which is available now. And then there'll be a Lego game later. So
none of these games are really too exciting for me, I have to say.
Yeah, it's not a huge month for games with gold. But that's okay, because the second tip is about this thing called the Ultimate Game Sale. And Microsoft has a huge collection of Xbox One and Xbox 360 games for sale for prices actually up to 85% off, which is crazy. But since posting the article about this, somebody on Twitter told me about the best way to browse this list, which is to go to a site called StoreParser.com, and you can sort the sales in different ways. You know, you can say, I only want to see Xbox One games. I want to see them listed by the amount of the discount or the percentage of the discount or whatever it is. And I actually just went through this today. I had some, I think about a $50 credit on the Xbox store. And I actually just bought several games today by sorting this. I think I sorted it so that it showed the biggest discounts. And went that way. So I went through the first, you know, I don't know, five or six pages or whatever.
Well, and I bought a bunch of games. Kraken Magma skin.
Yeah. So, for example, the games you see there at the top.
Rise, Son of Rome. That was a good game.
Because that was in, I think that was in the.
That was a launch title. That was.
Yeah, that's right. So, anyway, this is worth looking at.
Watch Dogs. Man, I wish I'd gotten that for free.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so Xbox gamers, you got to look at this because there's some really good stuff in there.
This is a great find. StoreParser.com.
Yeah, it's an awesome site.
You can sort it by a variety of things, but by biggest discount, I'll put all the free stuff right up top.
Yep.
That's nice.
It's not just for the sale. I mean, right now it happens to be stocked because basically everything's on sale right now.
Yeah.
You can get those, like you can see it there on the screen now, the Walking Dead games from Telltale, $5 each. Those are awesome games.
$5. Deus Ex, $15. Yep. Mankind Divided.
That's one of the games I bought there. Metro 2033, but there's a Redux that has both of the games in it.
Yeah.
So it's whatever the two. I don't care.
That's
what
$5. Are. $5.
Yeah. Well, the one I bought was probably 10 or 15. It was because it's two games, but it's you know, it's really it's
oh,
it's
this
good.
Really looks great. This is good. I'm gonna
Last Light. That's the other one.
I'm gonna go through this. Look for some new games.
Definitely worth checking out.
Good tip.
And then for the app pick, which is technically also a tip of its own in a way, there is an online service called Stamp I finally found out about. And I have people who write me, not quite every day, but certainly every week, who say, typically, I'm on Groove and I'm getting tired of it and I want to go to Spotify perhaps or Apple Music or whatever it is. And but what I want to do is transfer all my stuff over, you know, my songs, obviously, but also my playlists. And it's not a free service. You have to pay one time. You can pay $10 if you just want it on one platform or $15 to get it on Windows, Android, and iOS. I did that version because I wanted to see how it worked across different platforms. But this is awesome. And depending on what you're going to and from, you'll have different options.
Well, I have all these Spotify playlists I want to recover. I thought there was no way.
Yeah, here you go. And here's what's cool about this. This is for subscription services, right? So in other words, you have on Spotify a subscription service, so it doesn't have your own music in it, but you created these playlists.
Right.
And you want to get them to wherever you want to go, Apple Music or whatever it might be. And so what you should do is download the free version and first make sure it goes to the service you want, because that's going to be the first step. You can test it with up to 10 songs for free, but then you have to pay $10 or $15, probably $10, to actually do the entire playlist or whatever. And I've done this in multiple ways on different devices and between multiple services. And I have to say, the only hiccup I had was Google Play Music with dual factor authentication G Suite account is a little complicated, but that's very atypical.
But you could do it.
Yeah. It took me a while. There were three steps you had to go through to, authorize it and make it work. But
I can live with that because you're only going to do this once.
Exactly. Totally worth it. I did have some playlists in Groove that I had never moved over, because how ponderous it is to remake a playlist. It works great. And if there are songs it can't transfer, it will actually create a little error list of the songs it couldn't do, because typically what you'll find, and I did, is even though I couldn't find it, it was some kind of a metadata screw-up. So you go to the new service, you look for the one or two songs, you're like, oh, yeah, they have this song, and then you can just add it back to the playlist, and you're good to go.
Wow.
Yeah, it's really nice.
Now, I let my Spotify lapse, so I think I might still...
No, but you know what? I think that's still in there.
The playlist might still be there, yeah.
So where are you now?
I'm in Petaluma, California. It's a small town.
No, okay. Let me be more specific. no, I mean latitude, longitude, Leo. No, what music service are you using?
I have Amazon Unlimited, Google Unlimited, and Apple Music now is a $99 tier, so I'm considering it. But really, Spotify is where I wish I were.
Well, the way you could test this though is you could just put your playlists everywhere. And then
you don't pay per one thing. You do it.
No. Once you paid, you're done. You can transfer these things as much as you want back and forth.
So I can move it all over the place.
Yep.
Oh, this is well worth it. Because
it's a great service.
I was on Spotify since its beginning for a long, long time. I have a lot of playlists. Yep. Oh, very nice.
Yep.
Oh, very good. That's a good tip. Stamp.
Mine are all basically terrible songs from the 1980s, but you get the idea. It doesn't really matter what kind of music.
FreeYourMusic.com is the, the website for Stamp.
Yes. Definitely check it out.
Nice. Oh, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Now we go to the most exciting part of the show, Mary Jo Foley and her enterprise pick of the week.
You might be excited about this pick, surprisingly. It's not Stamp, but... Hey. This is about getting Azure training for free.
Nice.
So if you go to Microsoft's Azure website and you search for free training, there are 12 Pluralsight courses that are listed there. And they're completely free, like no strings attached free.
Nice.
It includes things like Azure Security, Azure Networking, Azure IaaS Solutions, developing with .NET on Azure. It's quite a variety. There's only 12, but they're all really good Pluralsight courses, and you can get to them for free and start learning about Azure. I have to thank Dan Fernandez at Microsoft. He's the one who tweeted the link to this today. So thanks, Dan.
Some great good tip. Teachers, and this is all free. Wow. Yeah, I could use some training in Azure.
Yeah, and it's free, so why not?
Yeah. And your code name of the week.
Codename pick of the week is Brainwave. This is a Microsoft codename I had not heard of until I looked at their annual Faculty Research Summit website. Every year, Microsoft has this thing they call the Faculty Research Summit, where they have Microsoft researchers and researchers from academia presenting for a couple of days at a conference. This year, it's going to be July 17th and 18th, and Microsoft's going to be webcasting some of this. So watch Channel 9 if you want to see some of these sessions. But there's a session about something called Brainwave, and Brainwave is a, quote, deep learning platform running on field programmable gate arrays. And this supports democratizing AI for all of Microsoft. So this is something they use internally. But why I'm interested in this is, you know, we've talked on the show about FPGAs, field programmable gate arrays. It's so hard to say that. And how Microsoft's using them in their own data centers. But I had never actually seen the connection between work that Microsoft was doing around deep neural networks and FPGAs. So this talk, I don't know if this is going to be one of the ones that are webcast, but this talk is going to be showing how those two things come together through this deep learning platform that Microsoft built for its own use called Brainwave. I'm very curious if they're going to at some point make Brainwave available to any customers of theirs, or at least academic researchers. I think it's really interesting that this year the theme of the research summit, the Faculty Research Summit, is all AI. Like every session in the summit this year is AI. So you can tell where Microsoft's putting its chips.
Yeah, not
that's
surprising.
The code name.
Yeah.
Yep.
And finally, let's get some beer, everybody.
Yeah.
Stop for beer.
So it's been really hot in New York. I don't know, probably Boston too. I don't know about Petaluma, but
it's a great article in the New Yorker. Actually, no, the New Yorker, it was an old article in 1997, but Arthur Miller wrote a story about what New York was like before air conditioning.
Oh, man, I can't even imagine it.
It's awesome. It's a great article. People would actually sleep in the park, and he said everybody bring their alarm clock so the ticks from the alarm clock would be syncopated. it was an amazing article.
I could imagine that because
it's
so hot.
I guess tweeted it because it's a 1997 article, but it's online. Yeah, Arthur Miller,
nice.
New York without air conditioning. Wow,
not a good thought.
You have AC in your home, I hope.
I do. Yeah. I have AC. I have two ACs.
Oh man, nice.
Yeah, but what else I do to keep cool is drink some nice light craft beers like Westbrook Gozer. Is the German, it's like a German style sour beer, just a little bit sour.
Paul, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it's the Keymaster as well, is it not?
Gozer? I don't know.
Yeah, from.
No, I didn't.
Never mind.
What?
Never mind. Thanks, Paul, for backing me up.
Yes, Keo.
It's pronounced G-O-S-E, but it's pronounced Gozer.
Gozer. Yeah, some people say goes. I've seen people say goes. Some say goes. I say gozer because I'm a Bostonian and I throw an R on anything.
Gozer. Looks good.
So this style is really good because it's very light in alcohol, 4%, has a little bit of salt in it, which sounds weird when you think of a beer, but it actually is very refreshing.
Yes.
And a little bit of coriander.
Mm.
And Westbrook,
also known as cilantro.
Yes. Westbrook, based in South Carolina, they do a lot of awesome beers, but they do this one and they do another one called the Key Lime Gozer that tastes just like a piece of key lime pie. So if you ever see Westbrook Gozer, try them. They're delicious.
I apologize. Actually, the key master was Clotho. He was the key master of Gozer.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So just, you know, I want to make sure everybody understands that I am not completely ignorant. like Paul Thurrott.
It sounds like the name of a D&D character.
Yeah, it's close. Chatroom knows, right? Chatroom knows what I'm talking about.
I usually do pretty good in this kind of thing.
Yeah, I'm surprised because I thought you were a nerd like the rest of us. It's something like this.
Thurrott outed as non-nerd.
I am Vince. Vince Clortho, Keymaster of Gozer. Vulcan Sildra, our Lord of the Sebulia. Are you the gatekeeper?
Hey, he pulls the wagon. I make the deals. You want to ride?
All right, enough of that. And if you still don't know what we're talking about, I just feel sorry for you. We are done.
Oh, yeah, wait. We have to talk about next week.
What?
Oh, yes.
Are you traveling again?
Yes. We are.
Oh, my God. Where are you going?
Not too far. We're going to Washington, D.C. next week.
Oh, this is the insignia or
Inspire.
Yep.
Inspire.
Yeah.
Well, not surprising you don't remember the name because it was something different last year.
Oh. It's usually called Worldwide Partner Conference.
Oh, that's a good name.
Yep.
Yeah.
Inspire. I know what that is.
It's pretty clear and obvious.
Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah.
Now it's Inspire.
But okay, we're doing Windows Weekly there.
Oh, really?
Next week.
Yep. Well, that's exciting. And we're doing it a little later. If you're tuning in, since we started late today, it would really be on time.
What's the start time? Is it 2:30?
11:30 a.m. Pacific, 2:30 Eastern.
Yep.
And you're going to will you be able to have a live audience at this event?
Yes.
Oh, good.
We will. Live audience, so anybody who's at the show can come and bring your questions. We'll probably do some Q&A.
Nice.
There.
Good. Fun.
And if you're at the show, I'm also doing my own session there on Monday at 1 called Reading the Redmond Tea Leaves.
Oh, that's good. Oh, I would like to go to that.
Come on and check it out.
Yes. Our magical gypsy.
I guess this doesn't matter to anybody per se, but I'm actually not going to the show because we're moving to I'm going to be at the live thing. So we're moving to Pennsylvania, like you know. So I'm going to be in Pennsylvania next week, but I'm going to drive down to do the show, and then I'm going to drive back.
Good. Good. And we have already been in touch with the site, and we are working on a good audio setup. So I apologize for...
It is fair to say that the technical support you will get from Microsoft will be about 1,000 times better than what you got from me.
Yeah. Little teeny bit better. So it should sound great.
Yeah.
And we can't wait. That's next week. And again, a little bit later, about half an hour late start time, if you watch live. It won't make any difference to you if you don't watch live, which most people don't. Thank you, Paul Thurrott. Mary Jo Foley. Paul is the editor-in-chief. No, what is your title over there at Thurrott.com?
We just make up titles. Who cares?
He's the named partner at Thurrott.com, along with Brad Sams. Mary Jo Foley is also kind of part of your team there over at Petri.com, where she does... Is that up now, the Microsoft social network?
No, we're fixing that still.
Okay.
Yeah.
But soon.
It's still in progress. But ZDNet is, of course.
Yeah. No, that's a going concern. All about Microsoft.com is the easiest thing to remember with Mary Jo Foley's blog, which she posts all the time. She's cleverly decided not to write books, but Paul Thurrott continues to do so. For reasons no one really understands.
Telling you, books of the future. Yeah. I don't know why I have to explain this.
Big pile of dead trees. There's nothing like it. You can flip through it. You can just do all sorts of things with it. Paul's books are found at leanpub.com. And the Windows 10 Field Guide is a must. And one of the nice things about having it on LeanPub is you can update it on a regular basis.
Yep.
Yeah. So it's always kind of completely caught up. And we thank you for joining us. Normally, again, the show is on 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern on Wednesdays. That's 1800 UTC. Be half an hour late next week, 1830 UTC. But if you're around at that time, you can watch it at work. You can plausibly argue that it's for your work. Boss,
until I open my mouth.
I'm learning here.
It's pretty much over.
If you're going to be watching live, do join us in the chat room. Great bunch of people there at irc.twit.tv. And if you're not watching live, you can always, watch after the fact. We have audio and video at our website, twit.tv/ww. There's also a YouTube feed. There's, maybe the easiest thing to do is find, however you like to listen to podcasts, there'll be a directory in there. You can search for Windows Weekly, find it, and subscribe. Then you could stop thinking about it. You just every Thursday morning when on your way into work or every Wednesday night on your way home, you'll have a copy of Windows Weekly waiting for you. Thanks for being here. We'll see you next time on Windows Weekly. Bye-bye.